Catholic Answers is proud to present A Very Pagan Christmas with Jimmy Akin. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and that's how I feel every Christmas. We got to defend Christmas against the accusation that it was all stolen from paganism. Again, we got to do this. Yes, we do. And we have a lot of fun doing that with Jimmy Akin in this week's episode. Here's what Jimmy had to say. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist at Catholic Answers. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Cy Kellett, host of Catholic Answers Live and Catholic Answers Focus.
Oh, that's right. And you, the host of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World.
Yeah.
Which I hope you will continue to do, because it's going to be weird if somebody else has to host it.
Like, I plan to continue with Dom, my co-host.
Very good. All right. Okay. So one of the things that we run up against at this time of year is media reports and other places. I mean, we had a kid who called the other day. His school teacher brought this up in class. This idea that Christians kind of stole a lot of pagan stuff and assembled it into our Christmas celebrations. That's what Christmas is, really a pagan thing that we've adapted.
Yeah, makes you want to spit, doesn't it?
Wait, why now? Why would you?
Like, you've heard this saying, "I'm so mad I could spit."
Yes.
Well, I get mad and frustrated when I hear nonsense like this.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say it's nonsense, and we'll have it. And I'm glad we have this opportunity to talk with you, because I want to do some specific ones.
Okay.
But also just the general idea here. Well, maybe by the end, we'll just talk about the reasoning that's being used here. It's rooted in fallacies itself. This whole approach to Christian holidays. All right. So Christmas.
I think people like doing it because they feel transgressive.
And, oh, you think so?
And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't normally psychologize people, but you hear this so much.
Right.
And it's presented in context as if it subtly undermines Christianity somehow. But I think people like repeating these ideas, which they never bother to check out.
Right,
you know,
that's
you
the
hear
problem.
People just declare this stuff, and it's like, "What's your source on that?" Oh, I don't know. I heard it somewhere.
Yeah.
Well,
didn't
really exercise critical thinking before you started adopting and repeating this rumor, did you?
Yeah.
But I think they say it because, and sometimes there's a kind of triumphal element with regard to, "Oh, so you Christians aren't really so holy. You're just, you've got this pagan thing."
Right. That's right. Right. And also, at root, what bothers me about it is it seems to come from a kind of approach to religion that says, well, Jesus is not all that special. He's just another instance. And you guys all, you know, you cobble these religions together.
That's one take on it.
Yeah.
I get annoyed because it's almost always, two problems. Number one, the claim is almost always wrong.
Yeah.
And number two, who cares?
We'll get to the who cares
yeah.
at the end, because that's an important thing. Because you could spend your life refuting, and it would be a worthy cause, refuting every accusation against Christmas. But there is a fundamental fallacy that we want to address that gets us to, well, who cares about any of this stuff? So, but here's something that's obvious. I think everybody knows this, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. That we exchange gifts at Christmas.
Yep.
Christians exchange.
Pretty common.
Yeah. And we all know that that is just a mimicking of the Roman celebration of Saturnalia. Everybody knows this, Jimmy.
Well, up to a point, Lord Copper.
Okay.
So first of all, now people may have heard this, but a lot of people don't even know what Saturnalia was. Saturnalia is a holiday that Romans celebrated. It did occur in December.
Mm-hmm.
It did not occur at Christmas.
No, it's earlier.
It's earlier, yeah. and it's a multi-day holiday, but it finishes before December 25th. Yeah. So so right there, why wouldn't we be giving presents earlier if we were getting this from Saturnalia?
Right.
Saturnalia also it's a festival of the god Saturn.
Yeah.
And it's true, from what I've read, and I could do further checking on this, but allegedly, Romans would give each other gifts at Saturnalia, not in the big way that we do, because they were dirt poor, most of them. And so you didn't have a big present bonanza the way you can in an economically affluent setting.
No one ever got a Nintendo 64 for Saturnalia.
No. What I've read, and again, I'd have to check more to see if this is actually true, but what I've read is they would like have one gift and you'd give it to one person.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you got like one gift from someone for Saturnalia, and it was a small little inexpensive thing. I don't know, maybe something someone made, because the vast majority of people were dirt poor.
Right.
And guess what? Gifts are not unique to Roman culture. Gift giving to foster good relations with people is built into human nature.
Yeah.
It occurs in every society, including ancient Israel. So, for example, at the Feast of Purim, sometimes called the Feast of Lots, but this is the one we read about in the Book of Esther, where after God delivers his people, they institute this feast. And it talks about how the Israelites gave portions of food to each other as gifts to celebrate.
Right, right.
So gift giving is a human universal that occurs in all kinds of cultures, and for reasons that have nothing to do with Saturnalia, it's a natural thing to do on holidays. I mean, you're giving gifts of some kinds. It could be food. It could be some kind of other object. But sharing gifts on holidays, I mean, even, you know, you think about the 4th of July. Well, you go over to someone's house, they're having a barbecue, and you get a free hot dog.
Yeah, and maybe bring them a bottle of something.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to someone's birthday, and you get a party favor. That's a little gift.
Yeah.
And so gift giving is just a normal thing humans do when they celebrate. And you don't need to chalk that up to Saturnalia, and there are no specific connections historically between Saturnalia and Christmas.
All right. Thank you for that one, Jimmy. What about Santa though and Christmas stockings? This comes from Odin flying over and giving gifts to the children.
Yeah. Right? So you'll hear these claims that, okay, so Odin, Santa Claus is this bearded guy who flies around and puts presents in stockings. And in recent years, you'll hear that, okay, this is based on Odin, the Norse god, the head of the Norse pantheon. And he's got a beard and he flies around on an eight-legged horse named Sleipnir. And little Norse children would put their boots by the fireplace, and they would put carrots and hay and sugar in them for Sleipnir to eat, because he's a horse.
Yeah.
Even he's got eight legs, he's a horse. And then Odin would put little gifts in the boots.
Yeah.
Okay, you know when this claim was first made? It's first in the literary record?
Probably in the 1500s, I'm guessing.
1994.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it was popularized in a book by a newspaper worker named Phyllis Safeker, called Santa Claus Last of the Wild Men or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she's a newspaper worker and not a historian. And her book is poor. She's passed on now, so I don't want to speak ill of the dead. But her book is very, very poorly reviewed as a historical resource. So there's just nothing in the historical record that supports this.
Yeah.
Also, because of the interaction between Christianity and Norse religion, there is cross-fertilization going on, because in Scandinavia, which is where they had this religion, it survived into Christian times, into like the 800s and stuff. And the earliest records we have of Norse mythology were written like by Christians.
And
they had been in contact for several hundred years before the Norse conversions. But like I forget if it's the Poetic or the Prose Edda, but that's one of the key sources of Norse mythology. They're the two major sources. But they contain what scholars regard as cross-pollination from Christian sources, like some of the Norse ideas about Ragnarok, which is their version of the end of the world, are thought to have been ideas that they got from from Christian missionaries talking about the second coming and the end of the world and the apocalypse. And so even if you had this Odin boots gift thing happening, which I don't know of any record supporting that, it would be dated from Christian times.
Right.
And could be based on Christian practice.
Right, right. Yeah, that old arrow of time is one of the things that comes up again and again in this. That
The arrow of causality.
Yeah, that's... Are those two different things? No, you'll have to explain that to me another time.
Okay, they are.
But yeah. We're living with so many arrows, Jimmy. I can't keep them all straight. But
you should get a quiver.
I probably should. This one I think is pretty clear, though, about Christmas carols. Actually, the word carol, as far as I've been told, comes from a Roman word that has to do with dancing around in a circle. Clearly a pagan practice, dancing. And so Christmas caroling is a pagan thing.
Well, on this one, even people who will try to make a link here will acknowledge, you look at the lyrics in the Christmas carols, they have nothing to do with paganism. They're about like, oh, little town of Bethlehem, where's the paganism in that?
Okay, yeah, that's a good point.
It came upon a midnight clear, silent night, you know. The lyrics are thoroughly Christian, but some people will try to say, now, I haven't looked up the etymology of the word carol.
Oh, yeah.
But you will have some people say, well, see, this is an ancient even though the lyrics are Christian, there was this pagan custom of wassailing.
Oh, yeah.
And
that is what you hear.
And so you'd have people at this time of year going around singing songs as part of their wassailing, which would involve drinking and scaring off evil spirits and trying to promote a good harvest and things like that. And there is a custom called wassailing. And the word wassail, now people today will think of it as a kind of a beverage, you know.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
And you even hear that in some of the Christmas.
Lift a glass of wassail or something.
Yeah, or
like that.
To you and your wassail too, and some of the carols and stuff. So, and it is a kind of, it's like a beverage, it's typically alcoholic. It comes from two Germanic roots. The it's like vase hail is the something along those lines is the original etymology of wassail. And hail means health. Like when you hear someone described as hale and hearty, they're healthy and hearty.
Right.
And vas, it comes from like to be. And so there was this essentially a toast you would give people. It's like, be healthy when you're drinking them.
Right.
And that came to be transferred to the name of the beverage
that
you're toasting them with.
Okay.
And so people would go around and do wassailing. They have in England. Not everywhere, but in England and maybe a few northern countries, they would do wassailing, and they would sing songs as part of that. In some places, they go into apple orchards in England and fire off firearms to, you know, ostensibly scare away demons.
Oh, I love the English.
Yeah.
Come on. Can we get that in American Christmas?
Lots of interesting customs. Well, that's more in January.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But, you know when wassailing is first entering the historical record?
500s, 600s?
1700s.
That's what I was going to
say. It's like mid-1700s.
Yeah.
So this is way after England was a Christian nation. And so this is not the basis of Christmas carols. People sing.
Yeah.
It's a human universal. It's people sing in every culture, and they sing at festivities.
Right.
And so you don't need to posit any weird connections other than we're Christians, we're having a celebration, let's write some songs about it.
Yeah, right. Right. This one does seem to, like the pattern seems to be like people did this before Christians, so Christians stole it. But like, we didn't steal singing, we're just singing.
Yeah.
Like it's not a theft. All right. This one though, I don't think you can refute this. The mistletoe one. I mean, this is obvious.
Kissing under the mistletoe, obvious fertility ritual, right?
That's what I was thinking, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, mistletoe has been used in winter celebrations in cultures before ours because it's an evergreen. You know, there are, if you're in a northern latitude or a very southern latitude, lots of plants, deciduous ones, lose their foliage at that time of year. It dies in the winter. All the leaves drop off. And there are a few plants that remain green during the winter period. And so if you want to hang up stuff in your house to make it festive, what are you going to hang up? The brown dead leaves that are rotting or the green stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so mistletoe. Right.
So mistletoe has been hung up by other cultures or used as decoration in the wintertime because it's a plant that stays green in the winter. It's natural for Christians to do that. That doesn't mean they're copying or even – we'll get to the who cares bit later. But it, just because mistletoe has been used as a decoration in different cultures doesn't mean it's a pagan thing. It's a green – it's a plant that stays green in the winter. Of course you're going to use it for decoration. Now, about this fertility thing.
Yes.
You know, and people could get very lurid about what they imagine involving fertility things. But in terms of the kissing someone under the mistletoe, you know who is the first group of people to be documented doing that?
Ancient Mesopotamians, maybe?
English household servants in the late 1700s.
And that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So this is something the servants started doing for fun in the big houses.
And it is a fun tradition. You got to give it to them. Those servants, they came up with something good.
Yeah, in the late 1700s. So way after England had been Christian.
But is it a possibility that these servants were secretly druids or Saturn worshippers?
Not unless they had access to a TARDIS because...
See, it always comes back to the TARDIS, Jimmy. It's possible then. So you're saying it's possible.
Not saying it's likely.
All right, but I got another Saturnalia one for you. Okay. Because what about decking the halls? Wasn't Saturnalia something where they decorated things for the Roman gods and or something like
that? Well, I've heard reports they did it with holly. I have not verified that from Roman sources. It may or may not be true. But again, holly is another evergreen plant. It's one of the few things that stays green during the winter. And so, of course, you're going to use it as a decoration. It's not uniquely associated with paganism. The reason that Christians would want to decorate with holly is not because pagans used it. It's because it's pretty at that time of year and one of the few things that is pretty at that time of year.
It's kind of like a seasonal thing. Well, if you're going to decorate, there's only a limited number of plants you can decorate with. This is an analogy. I want to see what you think of this analogy. Like at Christmas time, you often see Christians depicted wearing gloves. Mm-hmm. And the ancient pagans
gloves,
used to wear
totally
gloves.
That's totally pagan.
Yeah. Everybody wears gloves. It's cold out. All right. Okay. What about it does seem to me, though, that the pagan people, they would worship trees. Trees had this... spooky quality to them. And the
nymphs.
Nymphs and that kind of thing. And that kind of thing. Like there's other things like nymphs and that kind of thing.
Well, there are other kinds of things like sylphs and all kinds of
fairies,
mythological creatures.
Yeah. All right. So you cut down a tree and you bring it into your house. It seems to me, you're basically worshiping a tree, right? This is pagan.
You're not worshiping it unless you're worshiping it.
Okay.
Christmas trees, even though you will sometimes hear they have pagan origin, they don't. The first recorded use of Christmas trees, now there may have been predecessors, but the first recorded use was in 1576, which is not only after the Christianization of Europe, it's after the Protestant Reformation.
Yeah, right.
And in fact, you will often hear Martin Luther as having played a role in the development of the Christmas tree tradition. According to some accounts, it was Luther who first got the idea or who was first recorded as putting lights in a tree, which back then would have been, candles and stuff,
right.
Which is actually a bit of a fire hazard. But you don't find records of Christmas trees in earlier centuries when there were still pagans around. So this is just – there's a clear gap in the historical record, where after Europe has been Christianized, it's only hundreds of years later that you get Christmas trees, and so it again, there's just no there.
Yeah, it's just like I can see the holly and the mistletoe and all that. Mm-hmm. Who's the first person who thinks, let's drag a tree into the house. Like, what?
Oh, they did other things too. I mean, this is human ingenuity produces lots of stuff. There are lots of Christmas traditions we don't have anymore, like the Christmas pyramid.
Oh, you don't have the Christmas pyramid? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then we go out in the woods and we fire off guns. That's how we do it.
You wait until January.
Yeah, right.
And you only do that in the orchard.
Yes. Yeah, it's 40 days of guns.
Yeah.
So we have a whole season.
But, I mean, you know, people would have like a little wooden pyramid they would build, and they'd have little shelves on it. They could put objects on it to decorate it. And yeah,
really?
There was a Christmas pyramid that was common for a while.
I had no idea. All right, we get
so
to the
people are building pyramids. I'm not surprised they're doing stuff with trees.
Yeah, right. Well, as you said, we live in a consumerist society that has plenty of things. Maybe they're like, what can we decorate with? Drag that tree in the house. That's all they got.
Or I don't think it started in the house.
Oh, you did it outside.
I think they would do it outside.
Oh,
and then eventually they, hey, you know, it's warmer inside. Maybe we could do that in here.
Right. Grandma does not want to come outside this year. Bring the tree in for her. Okay, but the problem with all of this debunking that you're doing is that Christmas itself is just the adoption of a pagan holiday.
And that's not true. What you find, now you hear people claiming that Christmas was, the church decided to put Christmas on December 25th in order to co-opt a pagan holiday that occurred on that day known as the celebration of Sol, or the birth of Sol Invictus, which is the unconquerable sun.
Right.
Okay, we'll get to the who cares bit, but just once again, sticking with that claim as a matter of history, it is not supported by the historical evidence. And there's a channel I'll recommend that on YouTube by a young, he's a young scholar of Christianity, he's like a new PhD, but he has a very good video. He doesn't cover everything I wish he would cover, but he does cover the idea that Christians stole Christmas from Sol Invictus.
Yeah.
The channel you want to look at is called Religion for Breakfast.
Okay.
And so if you look up Religion for Breakfast, he's got a video. It's almost an hour long. It's like 51 minutes long where he goes into all the history about this. So he's really – he shows his work. He gives you the sources and everything. But basically – we just don't have evidence for this. Number one, if you think about, well, why would Christians want to co-opt this holiday? Well, you know, there are other holidays in the world. I mean, for example, there is, you know, St. Swithin's Day, let's say, or well, that's actually a Christian one. Okay, let's talk about the Jewish celebration, Purim.
Okay.
Okay? Well, okay, so we have Christians, we have Jews. Jews are celebrating Purim at a certain time of the year. Are Christians anxious to create a Christian version of that?
Oh, I haven't noticed that.
Yeah.
I don't actually know when Purim is celebrated. I apologize to all the listeners.
Well, it's a fairly minor Jewish holiday.
Okay.
And on the other hand, we have here in America an inflation of the Jewish holiday Hanukkah.
Oh, right.
Because it occurs at the same time as Christmas.
Yes.
So why would Jewish people want to create a Jewish alternative to Christmas, but Christians would not want to create a Christian alternative to Purim?
Can I take a guess? Because if you're in a minority status where you're trying to kind of defend the identity of the community, you need something for your people to do while the wider community is doing something else.
Well, that's part of it, but also it's a big holiday. Christmas has a – it doesn't so much matter if I'm a minority or not, but – Christmas is this huge cultural thing.
Yeah.
And Purim is not.
Right.
So.
Right. Like the people who invented Kwanzaa, they didn't put it at Purim. They didn't go, we need something to compete with Purim.
No, they put it at Christmas to try to attract more attention to it.
Right.
And make it part of that complex. So, people might have a motivation to try to create an alternative celebration for a big holiday. Was December 25th a big holiday in Roman culture that Christians would want to imitate.
Now here, go ahead. No, I was just thinking what you said before about Saturnalia would suggest no. Like the big holiday in December is Saturnalia.
Correct.
It's not what comes. Like you're not going to have two huge holidays in the same month.
Right. No, Saturnalia is the big one. It was a multi-day. It was like from the 17th to the 23rd. So it's basically a week.
Yeah.
And then a couple days later, you got this little other day.
Yeah.
Which is only one of three festivals devoted to the sun on the Roman calendar. Uh-huh. There's another one in August. There was a bigger one in October. And then there's this little dinky one that happens to be in December because December 25th was the day the Romans celebrated the winter solstice.
Yeah.
And
which is a sun event.
Which is a sun-related event. So this is a minor holiday, and Christians wouldn't have any motivation to copy it.
Mm-hmm.
And the earliest records of Romans celebrating it are after Christians have already been celebrating December 25th.
Yeah. So again, we're arrow of causality here.
And the probable solution is, I mean, the reason there are arguments you can make for December 25th being the actual date of Christ's birth. I'm open to those arguments. But there is a very good case to be made that the reason December 25th was picked is because it is the winter solstice in the old Roman reckoning, and it's 9 months after March 25th, which was the spring equinox in the March reckoning, and that was used as the Annunciation and the conception of Christ. So you had in the 300s and 400s, you had Christians trying to, they didn't have good records, but they were trying to use the evidence they had to back calculate when things in Christ's life would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various things you could use. Like we know he died at Passover, and that's associated with the spring equinox.
Mm-hmm.
And there came one way or another, there came to be a tradition that he was also conceived at the spring equinox. 9 months after that, you've got the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And so even though human gestation is not literally 9 months, it's actually between 9 and 10 months.
Right.
Which is why in the Old Testament, they think of babies being in the womb for 10 months instead of nine, because they count inclusively. But we tend to think of pregnancies as being 9 months. And so, okay, if he's conceived here in the spring, he's going to be born in the winter, and these are big, important dates. He's a big, important guy. Let's use those.
Right, right. Yes. And then it does have a symbolic quality to put the birth of Christ on a...
So you have this great spiritual light coming into the world darkness. When the light starts getting longer and the darkness starts diminishing.
Right, right.
But that's not because anybody was worshiping the sun. It's just the natural logic based on these calculations they were doing and based on the geophysical facts regarding the Earth and its axial tilt.
All right. Well, I appreciate that you have given us an assistance on all of these, but there is another way of looking at that, which is you could concede all of these, every single one of them. You could concede.
You would be wrong, but no, you could concede.
But yeah, just as a hypothetical, you know, you could, in another world, all of these things are true. Would that matter as far as our Christian faith?
Who cares? This is an example of what's called the genetic fallacy, where instead of judging something based on its merits, you judge it based on where it came from. And it's a logical fallacy, because what determines the quality of a thing is the qualities the thing has, not its history. Now, the situation can be more complex than that, but that's the essence of the thing. You can't simply say, oh, well, something was pagan, therefore it must be bad or somehow wrong. You know who invented Greek?
I don't know who
this
invented.
This is an easy one.
Wait, who invented?
Who would invent Greek, the Greek language?
The Greeks?
The Greeks.
Okay, I thought you were talking about a person. Saying Homer?
Were the Greeks pagan when they invented the language?
They were, in fact.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that
about them. So Greek is a pagan thing. And then these Christians come along and start using Greek to spread their Christian message. But they're using this pagan language.
Right.
And, you know, and so, yeah, duh. Who cares? There's nothing wrong with the Greek language just because it was invented by pagans. There would be nothing wrong with you decorating your house with mistletoe or holly or singing a song or sharing food or gifts or anything like that.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with any of those things. So who cares if pagans were doing them first? And who cares if even Christians that got the idea from there? If it's a good idea, you can use it.
Thanks, Jimmy. I really, really appreciate that. We're going to do another one of these next week where we're going to talk about the star.
Yeah, the star of Bethlehem.
And we'll do that. So I actually have to go right now. I got to go clean my guns and get them ready and work on my Christmas pyramid.
Okay.
So I'll be doing that. Thanks, Jimmy Akin.
My pleasure.
Getting ready for this episode, one of the nice things that I noticed is more and more secular people, more and more secular media outlets are catching on that this story of pagan Christmas is nonsense. It's been a staple of American journalism for, I don't know, 100 years or something, but it's not true. And most of the things that are alleged about Christmas being stolen or hijacked or appropriated from paganism, just not true. So we're glad to have Jimmy come in here and explain some of that to us. And we're always glad that you join us. We're approaching the end of the year here. So I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We'll see you one more time before the end of the year, but certainly a Merry Christmas to you and all of yours. If you got anything you want to write to us about, maybe this episode, maybe you got an idea for a future episode, just send it to focus@catholic.com. That's our email, focus@catholic.com. As you make your end of the year giving decisions, maybe you could include us in your plans. You can do so at givecatholic.com, givecatholic.com. And don't forget, we're trying to grow on YouTube because we've moved the show over to its own YouTube channel. If you would do all the subscribing and the hitting the bell and all the other things you can do at YouTube, you probably know more of them than I do. Do them. That'll help us grow. And if you're listening on one of the podcast services, don't forget to like and subscribe. And if you'd be kind enough, give us that 5-star rating and a nice review. That too will help grow the podcast. We'll see you one more time this year on Catholic Answers Focus next week.